I started crying, bawling my eyes out before I even got to speak, because maybe it was nerves, but I just said to the team, you know, guys, I know we're putting on the Kumuls jersey. It's a very proud moment. This is a huge honor for me, but when we go out there tomorrow, we've got to remember our families, those who have done, made a lot of sacrifices for us. And
David Mead's name carries weight in rugby league. 14 years at the top, over 230 professional games, and the honour of captaining Papua New Guinea. But the lessons he's taken from the game go far beyond the scoreboard. In this episode, David Mead, Lessons in Life and Leadership, we dive into what sport really teaches you about being a man, a leader, and a human being. From communication and humility to courage, vulnerability, and responsibility, David shares the insights that shaped him on and off the field. You'll hear stories about family heroes, the mentors who guided him, and even practical tools he uses today, like the power of breathing and the art of public speaking, to keep growing beyond the game. If you're a growth-driven bloke who loves his sport and values lessons you can apply to every part of your life, this one's for you. I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality. Find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. Hey David, how are you going?
Ian, thanks mate. I appreciate you having me on your podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Like I said before, you record. You're exactly the sort of guest I love to get on. Someone who's got that high performance background from a sport perspective, but you're also now helping other people to be their best. And it's a good mix. So I'm sure you'll have heaps of great messages for the listeners. So let's dive straight in. I was just having a bit of a look through your Insta feed and some of the videos you put out, and I can see that there's a real connection there around your place of birth, PNG. It must be exciting knowing that you're going to have an NRL side coming in the next few years.
Yeah, mate, it's definitely exciting. I think, especially growing up in PNG, spent the first 12 years of my life there, so I feel a sense of connection and, I guess, responsibility as well. I get a whole heap of questions thrown at me through whether it's social media or going to talk to a local footy team, even locally here in Australia or in Brisbane, Port Moresby, wherever it is. So, and the questions are quite common. You know, how did you get to play NRL? What inspired you? What did you eat? All those kinds of things. So I try and create a bit of content around that and put it out on my feed so that, you know, for those who need it can find it. But I guess the PNG team coming in is pretty exciting for myself. I get to see people from my local community getting a chance to hopefully live out their dreams one day. So that's why I feel a sense of pride and connection to PNG.
Yeah, I love it. Have they reached out to you about getting involved in any capacity?
No, not really. I think because I do a bit of work with the Brisbane Broncos still, and the club's been really good for me. I mean, still involved with doing community projects with the Indigenous high school girls here in Brisbane and out west and northern New South Wales. So that's been really good, and I'm still doing a bit of corporate work with the club as well. So I think if an opportunity come up with PNG, I'd have to, you know, weigh it up, because although I'd love to help in that capacity, Brisbane Broncos have been very, very good to me and my family as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, very cool.
You know, we'll have to consider that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they, knowing the rugby league community, they'd be more than happy for you to at least have some sort of voice there, given how important they would know that it would be for you. You moved from PNG at 12, did you say?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And I was watching your videos, like giving you an opportunity around schooling, I think I read.
Yep.
What was that shift like? It must have been a bit of a shock to the system at 12.
Yeah, certainly was, mate. So my auntie adopted me at 12. Her eldest son got into uni at Lismore, New South Wales, and they lived there for a few years. And then, you know, I was getting I was getting a bit of trouble here and there, but I don't think that was a reason why I was taken out of the village. It was just an opportunity to get a better schooling, better education in Australia. So, I was lucky enough to be picked out of my 40 cousins there and given that opportunity. And I think fortunately for me, the timing was right when the Gold Coast Titans came in. When I finished my high schooling years, they were doing a lot of the recruiting down there, and I got my opportunity that way.
Yeah, do you reckon maybe your auntie saw something in you that maybe you didn't see at that stage?
Oh, mate, it's probably easier for her to get me out of there because I think out of all her siblings, my mum was the one who didn't have her husband around, so I was brought up by a single mum.
Yeah, right.
So in that sense, she probably felt sorry for me and gave me that opportunity, because everyone else had both parents there putting them through school. So I think my mum had a bit of trouble, so I think that was her way of assisting her. Whether there was some talent, I don't think she would have seen any talent. I don't think I had much of it as a kid, to be honest.
Really?
And I wasn't really the smartest in school either, so I think it was just out of sympathy more than anything, to be honest.
So, how do you go then from having been a kid who hasn't got much talent to playing NRL within what, you were 18 when you debuted?
Yeah, so I was 19 when I played for the Cornwalls and then 20 when I debuted for
Yeah,
the
right.
Titans.
Yeah.
How did it happen? I think having good people around me. I think playing rugby, I played rugby union for 5 years, under 12s to 17s, and then switched over to league. I think in those moments when I was 16 to 18, I had some really good coaches around me, teaching me how to eat better, train better, the importance of sleep. So I think I got those, I didn't get it right straight away, but adopting those things into my training and pushing myself, I quickly understood that it was going to take some hard work to realize my dreams. And like I said, plenty of good people around me to support me and push me in the right direction.
Yeah, that's good. And it just demonstrates how important that is. And I imagine that's part of your inspiration to be helping other people is that help that you got, knowing how important it is, particularly for younger people.
For sure, mate. I got a lot of help by people who didn't need to help me.
No.
They would just put time into me and they'd never expected anything in return. All they wanted to see was for me to do well. And one guy in particular, Craig Hodges, who's been around the game for a while now, he was involved with the Warriors, at the Broncos as well. So, he'd drive me an hour and a half each way, 4 days a week, 3 days training,
Legend.
and one of those days games. He was coach of one of the other teams. So, he picked me up after school, dropped me off after training, and it was a year of, pretty solid effort in grade 12. But he was sitting in the car talking to him. Half the time I'd be asleep because I'd be knackered. He gave me a lot of advice on rugby league on the field and off the field as well, what to do to get the best out of myself. So, people like that, I'm really grateful for, and hopefully I can pass pay it forward in some way as well.
Yeah, and you're doing that in a great way. One of the things you talked about, one of the videos, was communication, the importance of communication skills. And I do some work in schools, and I'm a big believer in that too. Like I'm a natural communicator, but I wasn't in those early days.
Yeah.
But I learnt how perhaps school, yeah, it's important to get an education, but there's not the pressure that needs to be on that is applied in so many places. But I've always been a big believer it's those social skills that you get out of school which is far more important and take you a long way. Can you tell the listeners a bit about just how important that is? Because whether it's for an older person or someone that's looking after younger people, whether it's a coach or a teacher, what are some of those important things to help young people bring out those communication skills?
Yeah, I guess there's different levels of it, right? I wouldn't say I'm a very clear communicator. I just had to try and get out of my shy self. I think to this day, I still think of myself as an introvert. If we're in a group setting, I probably won't say too much. But if it's a one-on-one interview type setting, then I'll speak a lot, or on stage, you won't stop me talking. So I guess there's different ways. But I guess communication, it's everything, and particularly in rugby league and sport, if you want to make it to the highest level. It helps you to concentrate. It helps you to stay in the game. And if you don't express your views in team meetings, it's going to be very hard for the coach or your teammates to know what you're thinking. So, and if you don't express yourself and you don't get your thoughts out there, Other people, they won't really get to know you either. So I think it goes both ways. You've got to be able to communicate, try and communicate as clearly as you can what you want, what you need, and ask for the same from your teammates and coaches as well, if they can communicate clearly to you. And you show that by listening. I think it's very important that we listen more than we talk, and so that, our teammates feel heard as well. So, it's one of those things. Trevor Gilmeister, he was really big on talking. So when I first debuted for the Titans, Gilly would it run the water on him. If I didn't speak for 5 to 10 seconds on the field, he would be into me about talking. And it didn't matter what I said, as long as I said something. And Scotty Prince was the same. He was the half on my side. And if I stopped talking for, no joke, 5 to 10 seconds, Princey would be looking at me going, "Meaty, effing talk," And so those guys knew the importance of communication. So, I think that's why I try and emphasize that fact today as well.
And I imagine you must have been a decent communicator if they're going to you specifically, that they're asking you, that you must have been able to have a positive impact through your words.
Well, I don't know if it was positive or not. I think they just needed someone to say, "I'm here, I'm going to catch the ball if it goes up." Or if I'm not in the line and I'm at the back, let them know so that they can adjust the defense accordingly. Whether I was good at it or not, that's probably for them to let you know. But I like to think that, sometimes Gilly would always say, "Mate, if you just talk, the opposition's going to look at you, and sometimes you'll bluff them out of coming your way. That you might have short numbers, but because you're talking so loud, calling out the plays and the names, they might just turn the ball under and get the back row to run back into the middle of the field." And you know what? It happened a lot of the times. You'd be talking, you'd be really loud, and the center and winger on the opposite end would kind of look at, "Oh, no, go the other way."
It's confidence.
And so
Yeah,
it's so it
wow.
works, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a good lesson for the youngsters listening around how they can have an impact, because I've shared the story on here before in one of my individual episodes around that was a big thing for me. I was blessed with a couple of coaches who'd played international football, and that was one of the messages when I was 13. It's like you, same as what you described. You yell at me the moment I stop talking. Got to keep talking. Got to keep talking. And it's just another example. I know you've mentioned this as well. In some of the stuff that you put out there, it's just I think you were talking to a group of kids in PNG about your journey, and you were talking about how I love the humility. You said, "Oh, I'm not saying I'm successful, but what I know is that playing in that level of sport has taught me a lot of lessons around life, and communication is such a great example."
Yeah, for sure. I
So.
think it's just something for PNG kids, I guess. If you're what I've noticed in the NRL is, coach will ask for feedback from the group. You won't see any Pacific Islanders or Melanesian putting their hand up. It's mainly Australians or English guys putting their hand up to talk, because it's probably a cultural thing as well. That communication, so it needs to be emphasized a lot more, for sure.
Yeah, and in general, that generation don't seem to be as loud a communicators. I've seen it firsthand in the work I do, but I've also heard some of these coaches talk about it, how that's one of the challenges is they don't tend to be as communicative. And I was just watching a video this morning, and they were talking about the important skill. It might have been Simon Sinek, I think. He was talking about how an important skill is for that generation is just to talk to strangers. So you can start developing that ability to communicate in pressure situations, because they're similar to what you shared. That's what people in businesses who are hiring are looking for. They're looking for people who can hold a conversation and can listen and then respond with the right thing to say. Is
Yeah,
that
for
valid?
sure. And I think the setting probably matters too. Around our friends, if there's no group meetings or anything like that, you're gonna talk. So I think, I remember Cardi or Wayne or one of them blowing up. We get to the warm up, and you're supposed to talk in the warm up so you lift the energy intensity. Sometimes they'd stop the warm up and say, "Boys, you can hear a pin drop out here. You do all the shit talking you want before we get to the field, and then as soon as we get here, you shut your mouth and don't say a word. We need you to flip that." So I guess that, it's very important that you communicate.
Absolutely. You talked, another thing I was, when I was listening to you, you were talking about
the importance of that flow-on effect when if you you're talking about from a neighbor's perspective, and if you know if you've got a good relationship with your neighbors and then they've got a good relationship with their neighbors and how that flows through. What about more in like a modern setting or a football environment? Like, how does that flow-on effect, that ripple effect, happen when people are being more positive, more communicating better, and bringing something to the table that's going to be beneficial?
Yeah, I guess it's just energy, right? You know, sometimes we train in the morning, we've done all the talking there, you have some food at, you know, 11:30, 12, and then you got to do a gym session at 1, 2 o'clock. And sometimes when it gets to that time, everyone's tired and it's hard to get going. So sometimes all you need is someone who just to crack a joke or, you know, bring some energy, do something or say something or encourage each other to lift the energy, and then you can, you know, train a bit harder than what you would if you just, you know, closed your mouth and didn't say a word. Now, I'm not saying you go out there and be loud or, you know, be over the top. That's not everyone's personality, but just bringing some positive energy through talking and communicating is sometimes the spark that the group needs. And, you know, it's something that's always been really important in professional rugby league teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you remember a game where you, like, everything sort of clicked for you and you felt like you were really being that positive impact, not just in how you were influencing others, but how everything just flowed for you as well?
I think most games you felt like when you talk, you're in the game, you're not really thinking too much outside of it. It's probably more the games that I didn't talk that I remember. You know, you kick off and the other opposition's got a momentum, they score a quick try and then score a couple more quick tries, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's 18-0 with 15 minutes into the game and shoulders are dropping, heads are down, no one's really saying too much. And they're the times when you need to go the opposite way. And again, you don't have to loud, you don't have to scream, you just have to tell your teammates, let's go, we got this. You know, we've got to back each other here. You know, just little simple cues like that where you feel like you're in the game. I can say that the games that I nearly talked for 80 minutes where you feel like you're going to lose your voice, they were definitely my better games than when I was a bit more quiet.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to that because I love, again, your humility, not wanting to necessarily talk too much about yourself, but I'd love to hear like a great moment, like personal moment. I know it's a team environment, and maybe that personal moment is when you had a great win or when you made the finals or whatever it was, but can you think of a moment in all of your playing career that just really was almost like a defining moment from how positive and how, what a like a positive impact it had on you?
Mate, I think probably I was given captaincy for PNG Kumuls in 2016, and the night before the game, I think the coach, Michael Marham, said, you know, Marcus Bye got up and said a few words. You know, it was very touching, very inspiring, and then Michael Marham said, Meaty, go up and say a few words, captain, for the game, just tell us how you feel. And so I went up there and, you know, I felt stuck. I'd never been in that position before to speak in front of a team. And so, you know, I started crying, bawling my eyes out before I even got to speak because maybe it was nerves, but I just said to the team, you know, guys, I know we're putting on the Kumuls jersey. It's a very proud moment. This is a huge honour for me, but when we go out there tomorrow, we got to remember our families, those who have made a lot of sacrifices for us. And I immediately thought about my grandmother who looked after me as a young kid growing up through the villages. And I said, I remember her putting a billum on her head, putting food in it, and walking kilometres to feed her family. And I think that moment right there, I think, because I could see a couple of my teammates, they started crying as well, and I know they were thinking about their families. Yeah. And so, you know, we went out there and we played pretty well. We played against Fiji, won the game. And, you know, I think that moment there, it wasn't even on the football field. It was off it with the team in the team room. Gave me the confidence to be vulnerable, to be able to express myself in front of my teammates. And I know that there was definitely some power in that because I could just tell, you know, we played for each other that next night.
I get goosebumps through that, and I'm sure the listeners could think of their own version of that when they were playing, no matter what level they played at. My mind straight away went to, I might have been a week or two after my dad passed away, and the captain was out, and he handed me the captain's armband, and I had the same experience. Like, I could barely speak, but we played one of the top teams, and we just blew them off the park because of that. Yeah, just the power of vulnerability.
For sure.
It's an area that I think sporting organisations know they need to delve into, but at this point I'm not sure they know exactly how to do that. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on how you make that more normal in that environment of very blokey men who are perhaps still grappling with being able to make that a natural thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, because, you know, NRL teams, I've only been to a couple, so I can't speak on every club's behalf, but the teams that I've been a part of, the coaches, they've been pretty good with, you know, embracing vulnerability, letting players be able to express themselves. You know, there's still a lot of old school coaches in part of these teams, so going there is probably uncomfortable for them as well. So I think it's probably going to take a bit of time. I think it's a generational thing as well, where accepting vulnerability, letting guys be able to cry in team rooms or be able to express themselves. I think it's definitely come a long way since when I debuted.
Yeah.
But probably still a bit of a way to go as well.
Yeah, I think those videos of young fellas getting their first
games, that's right,
or whether their parents come and present the jersey, and there's always a lot of emotion there. And I think, well, I know that people love that, right? People are really drawn to that. So it's all there. People know that it's within them. It's just, we just need to keep breaking down those stereotypes and those stigmas around it. And yeah, I think you're right. It'll take maybe even more than one generation, but we'll get there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It made me think of, you know, you talked about family and the impact of family and how powerful that was. I imagine there's an element of that would have been really cathartic for you as well, because if you think about what you went through, coming away from your family, moving, being the one person that got to do that, like maybe not at a conscious level, but at a subconscious level, there might have been part of you like going, you know, well, how lucky am I that I've got to do this? Almost maybe you're, you know, maybe, I don't know if unworthy is the right word,
but, yeah. I certainly know what you mean by that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that moment would have been quite almost like a healing experience.
Yeah, it's a weird one. You kind of just go, man, there's a few other guys here who can definitely put that captain next to their name, and they were certainly still leaders in my eyes. But I guess, you know, there's a lot of gratitude from the family who's helped you there, but then more in particular my wife, who had been with me from nearly the start of my NRL career and to this day. But in that moment, you know, she was always making sure that I was well fed. I got my sleep in. If I was feeling down, you know, she'd notice it and just make sure that, check in that I was okay. So, you know, she's the number one hero in my life right now and for the majority of my NRL career, because she could notice things before I could even express them myself. So, you know, my heroes, they changed over time. My wife is certainly top of that list at the moment, because, yeah, like I said, if you don't get your sleep, your mood is certainly different throughout the day. So yeah, she made sure that, I mean, we look out for each other, and, you know, we've got kids now, and we work as a team to make it work, but you know, she's always made sure that my well-being was a priority.
Yeah, that's good. And I think all partners of people who play sport, regardless of the level they're playing at, they have an understanding that there's a certain ritual we all like to go through. And even like a lot of you know, female sports really taken off, and my wife played football, and the same thing, right? Like she'd get...
Yeah.
She'd have certain things she wanted to get done in a day, and if we weren't supporting that, then there'd be a level of frustration. And
yeah.
So I love that answer. You know, talking about families, and the person that sort of came to mind was Ange Postecoglou, that when he was coaching the national team here in Australia, and I've seen a few videos of since then working for different clubs around the world, he made that a real focus. And I even saw one speech when he was talking about, you know, when we go out there tomorrow, like he got them to sort of write down who they were representing and that power of it. It is such a powerful force, isn't it? So if you look at what you've said about your wife being your hero, you've got children of your own. What's an important thing that you want to make sure you pass on to them so that they understand the importance of it, not just from that growing up perspective, but what they will then carry forward for the rest of their life?
Okay, there's probably a number of things, but the one thing that tops it is, I think, you know, having gratitude there. And I don't mean gratitude as in like just trying to feel good all the time. It's just like realizing that there's other people. There's a strapper who's making sure your legs strap properly so you don't get injured. The guy pouring the drinks, you don't know how much the things he's dealing with, and he's making sure that the water bottles are filled, you've got your Powerade. So a lot of those people, they play a role, and we can overlook that sometimes. And so just appreciating the little things that people do, which contribute to the big things, it's very important for my kids. You know, I know kids, they've still got a lot to learn, and so do we as adults. But for me, for my two boys, I try and teach them the power of gratitude and respect as well. So if they can do that throughout their adult lives when they grow up, I feel like I've done a good job.
Yeah, I love it. They're such powerful teachers to us too, aren't they? They can certainly shine a light on parts of us that we need to improve.
Yeah, they certainly do that every single day.
Yeah. Oh, so good. What about the work you do now, David? Like you're working with businesses, you're doing some stuff with the Broncos. What's the part of that really lights you up, that you just get so immersed in it because you just love the impact you're able to have?
So I've got a couple of different hats on. One is with the Sir Brian Bell Foundation in Papua New Guinea. So they're the philanthropy side of an organization that's been there for 70 years. So Brian Bell, he went over 70 years ago. He was selling white goods to the local expatriates, and then it turned into this huge company that's got 1,300 staff across the country. And I went in to do some work with them, with their internal programs, talking about values and good behaviors, because if the company does well, then they give money to the foundation, which is connected to that, the Sir Brian Bell Foundation. That foundation over 9 years has handed out 50 million kina to grants, to the hospital, to schools, they focus on health and education. And one of the programs that I was lucky enough to be a part of was literacy learning and for young kids between the ages of 5 and 7. There's a group of young kids taught how to read, and the results from that, you know, they're huge, because the country is in a bit of trouble with their education and hospitals, but to see the work that this foundation's done with these kids to be able to help them read, help them to understand the value of good nutrition so they can avoid going to the hospital, as well as their parents and families, that's been really heartwarming for me. And you know, it's got nothing to do with rugby league, but I've been able to leverage my profile in PNG to be able to contribute in that way. And you know, the feedback from that is these kids are ahead of the rest of the country in terms of their reading and their writing because of programs and initiatives like this. Yeah, so I'm very grateful to be a part of it.
Oh, that's massive. The Clontarf Foundation here in Australia, working with Aboriginal boys, has that sort of impact as well, and they talk about how that actually increases life expectancy because they end up being able to find work. And so I imagine that the flow-on effect of that must be absolutely huge in terms of what that gives those young men.
Yeah,
and women.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I'm also part of the Brisbane Broncos, who do work with the Indigenous Girls Program, and that's, you know, thousands of Indigenous girls going through high school have had similar effects, able to go and find employment after school and further studies and like you said, increased life expectancy and improved health. Because, you know, when we're educated, when we know better, we can live better. So it's just about, I guess for me, being a part of programs like that and playing my small part is, you know, it certainly fills the cup when you walk away from it knowing you've done something good.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, speaking of physical health, I noticed the books behind you. You've got the 4-Hour Body. You've got Wim Hof there.
Yeah.
What have you found out about, I imagine a lot of those books actually came after your playing day.
What's yes, they did, and I wish I read them in high school. Like, you know, yeah. I look and go, why was this not here, or why did I not find it before I played first grade? You know,
yeah, I think that's one of the gifts from like going through a personal development journey is that you then realise how these messages need to be passed on to more of those people at that level, and that's something that I'm feel extremely grateful for that I've been able to provide to my children is that you know you can look at the world differently to what we grew up looking at. Yeah, so many of those things you go, where was this 30 years ago? Like, imagine the difference could have made.
Does it help you play better rugby league? I don't know. I'm sure it does. But, you know, the 4-hour body, a couple of different exercises there. The book's been around for a while now, and you're starting to see it get you some of the techniques and things described in the book, they're starting to come out in professional teams now. So Tim Ferriss, who's the author of the book, I think, you know, he is decades ahead of the professional sports. I love his work. And Wim Hof, he's quite popular has been quite popular over a number of years with his breathing techniques and, you know, his cold plunges. And there's certainly things, and they're not easy to do, but if you practice them, you certainly see results, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Tim Ferriss reference, the 4-hour work week book that he has had a big impact on me. There was one particular part where he was talking about how with his business, he realised that, I think he said, like, you talk about the 80-20 rule and, like, where's the value coming from? He realised that 80% of the money that was coming into his business was from one particular business. But he also worked out that 80% of the drama was coming from that same business, and how having the courage to then
sack that kind of thing.
Suck that business, knowing that he'd have a time there where he would have to then make up that shortfall. But the difference, he said, that made from a positive perspective to his staff and to the business was made it totally worth it. Now, I know that's something you talk about is courage. What's whether it's from a story, from your own experience, or where you've helped people, but how do you go about helping people find more courage, Dave?
Yeah, I guess courage depends what form it is in. I guess we're scared to do a lot of things, right? Whether it's public speaking, playing sport, going and talking to the person in the corner saying hello, or ordering something and asking for a discount, whatever it is, requires some form of courage. You know, I'm not immune to fear. I certainly feel my discomforts and uncomfortable moments many times throughout the day. But I guess it's, for me, I was always scared of public speaking. And I've read several books and they pretty much just said, you just have to do it to get better and to get over the fear. And the fear is still there sometimes, you know. You feel like you don't want to stuff up before you get up and talk, and if you get up and stuff up, you don't want to faint, or, you know, people to say, you know, you're full of crap, all that kind of stuff. You feel like someone in the crowd is going to call you up for whatever. All those fears are still there. But I think it's just, you know, just facing it. Whatever discomfort you feel, get up, face it, and you'll realize 99% of the time you made it all up in your head, whatever the fear was. And, you know, I do a couple of exercises in schools, especially with the girls program. We say everyone stand up and you know, raise your hand if you need help with, you know, mental health, productivity, time management, whatever it is. Yeah. And no one will really raise their hands. And I'll just look at them and just say, are we just going to have a staring contest, are we? And they kind of just laugh and they say, you know, we feel shame raising our hands to talk, but I say, you know, that's the part that we need to face and get over. So you know, courage. We're scared in many different forms. If you apply yourself and overcome one of those things in even some small way, you've applied some courage. So I guess that's how I like to see it.
Yeah, I love that. I was having a conversation with a coaching client just before we jumped on, actually. He was talking about that. Like, I just reminded him of what we talked about before is when you're facing new situations, there's always self-doubt. There's always an element of fear. But the belief and the courage comes from evidence. And you sometimes just go, I have to do it once. And then review it and then go, well, how do I go into this differently? And then just continue to build that evidence, and then the courage will come on the back of that, right?
Yeah, for sure. I guess you know, when you get good at doing something over time, you probably don't require courage anymore. You just do it. It's
Yeah.
it's only when things are new or there's a bit of uncertainty around it, then you start to feel a bit of fear, anxiety, or worry, whatever it is, and then that can take away some of your courage.
Yeah, absolutely. The speaking on stage thing, the best thing I heard when I was starting out was you have to continue to remind yourself that everyone in the audience is actually willing you to do well. They're not sitting there picking apart what you're saying. They're not sitting there hoping you do badly. They're actually wanting you to succeed. And that just had a real good shift for me because it's like, okay, we're all going in the same direction. Like they're imagining themselves there. They're wanting you to do well, so yeah, like just
Yeah,
go out
that's
and
a
do
really
it.
good point, actually. Yeah, I don't think I've ever sat there going, "Geez, I hope this person stuffs up when I
No
listen to
one
them."
does that. Even in a school environment where maybe there's some people don't like each other, that no one likes to see anyone in that real uncomfortable position.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And that just really left a mark with me. So maybe that's one for the listeners. You've also got a book there I noticed before, Breathe, and you mentioned Wim Hof, but also just like the mindfulness breathing, the connection breathing that I'm noticing more NRL teams adopting. What have you learned about the importance of breath? Because people tell, oh, well, you breathe, so what? But it is a real powerful and important part of high performance, isn't it?
Mate, I guess it's the number one thing, but you don't consciously think about it because we do it automatically. So I do a bit of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now, and I've been doing it for the past 2.5 years. I train with guys, and we're always talking about this, like, geez, I feel so tired after that role. I don't know why. I'm doing my cardio, I'm lifting weights, I'm eating well. And then we all say, well, were you breathing through while you're getting choked out? Like, well, not really, because I'm tense and holding onto that arm. I'm like, well, if you try and breathe through it and you just tap, you won't be as tired. But I guess breathing is really beneficial when you're having hard times, whether it's receiving some bad news, sitting back and just taking a few breaths and just trying to calm down. I know it's easier said than done because when we hear some bad news or when we're feeling anxious, it's hard to just sit still and breathe. Sometimes walking and breathing deep, I find that helps. So, whatever form it's in, or in whatever, I guess, sport or area that you're in, applying some conscious breathing is always going to end in a positive result.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like any skill that you need to practice, you need to train, and you'll get better. And if you're conscious of it and you're self-aware and you catch yourself when you're holding it, yeah, it changes a lot of things. Just that ability to relax your body. It's amazing. Just the moment you go, ah, oh, like, okay, I'm tensing, stop tensing, you almost automatically breathe better, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure you've had a lot of really powerful mentors over the years, and as a mentor yourself now, someone that helps other people, you know how important that is. Is there a particular mentor from your life that's has been really important, maybe still is really important, that's left a mark on your life that has been absolutely crucial to get you where you are now?
I guess there's been different mentors throughout different periods of my development as a not just as a rugby league player, but as a person. I guess throughout, I think I mentioned earlier Craig Hodges, who's vital in that 1 year we travelled to Tweed Heads and back, during my grade 12 years. And I feel like I got a MBA in rugby league in 1 year, because it was my second year of playing rugby league, and I was still trying to understand the rules. Positional play, all those kinds of things, and he just helped me to, get my knowledge from here to here, and I feel like that set me up quite well to, in terms of my attitude and my habits. He'd always talk about developing good habits, habits when you're fresh and habits when you're fatigued. So that's something that stuck with me, and Hodjo, he's been instrumental in me recalling those messages, because without him, I don't think I apply myself quite well for in preparation for the under 20s and then to go on and play first grade. In saying that, I think someone like Wayne Bennett, I only worked with him for 1 year at the Broncos. Three messages that I remember from him were nothing to do with rugby league. They were just simply about being a good person and having values. Number one was, you know, he said, and he was always in a team environment, he said, "Boys, I don't want to see any rubbish laying around, because if you leave rubbish laying around, it means you don't respect other people. You're expecting them to pick up after you. And if you're expecting them to pick up after you in the locker room, they're going to be picking up after you when we play footy." So a really simple one that stuck with me. And another one was, he said, you know, you're going to turn up to training. Some days you're going to be fresh. Other days you're going to be tired. You're going to be fatigued. You're not going to want to train. But all I ask from you is just to give your best. And it was literally as simple as that. You're kind of waiting for him to see, you know, say some magic words, but that's all he said. And, you know, I can see why he got the best out of people, because he kept it really, really simple.
Yeah.
And
took,
I guess,
the pressure off.
He did, mate. All he said was, I don't care how you're feeling, give your best. You might not hit your targets, but as long as you're having a go, that's all I asked from you. And I guess the final one that I remember from Wayne was, it was to eliminate any excuses or gossip in the team. So he would say, you know, I know there's a lot of you Polynesians in here. If you don't make the team, it's not because of your background. It's because if you're good enough, you will play. And, you know, funny enough, round one would come around and most of the team were Polynesians anyway. So, you know, a couple of messages that Wayne said that stuck with me. But, you know, mentors, there's been so many. I could probably write a book on them and what they've said to me, and that's played an impact. But those are the couple that I remember.
Maybe you should write a book. That'd be fantastic. Because it's interesting you mentioned excuses, and that's something that I also noticed from you is consistent through your videos. You talked about, like, taking responsibility. Like, you can have all these different things happen in your life, but ultimately you've got to take that responsibility, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I hear a lot of people, I guess it's probably just consuming social media stuff, right? People can complaining about government, and PNG's big on it, and you do see that the government does need to do something about the schools and hospitals. I'm not taking anything away from that, but then it's also the same people who are complaining that if given an opportunity, they wouldn't do anything with it anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's just about saying, you know, if you're not going to pick up the broom and sweep in front of your house or make your bed, you know, help around the house, contribute to the household, why are you complaining to the government about not providing this, this, and this? The people who do take responsibility, you know, they don't need that advice. They're already doing it and they're doing quite well. It's just about reminding everyone else, stop asking for people for things constantly when you can do something about it yourself.
Yeah. And ultimately, that's the only thing we can do, is the part that we can control, what we bring to the table.
That's right. And we can bring a lot more to the table than we think.
Yeah, it's that flow-on effect that you mentioned. We talked about at the start. Like, every time you step up and take more responsibility and be more positive, then that has a far bigger impact than jumping on and absorbing all of this negative stuff about what's not going well.
For sure. You can do that in your household with your, you know, with your kids, your wife. Clean up your yard, do the lawn, take the bins out, whatever it is. And then when you're at your local footy team, if you're just a spectator, fine, great, don't complain. But if you're a spectator complaining about why isn't the field marked properly, or, you know, why aren't they more water, go and help out and do something about it, you know. It's more that's more my messaging than anything else.
Yeah, and much needed. Like, we live in a culture, like you said, social media is full of people making excuses or blaming other people, and it's shielding them from what they need to be paying attention to themselves.
Correct.
It's interesting what you said about Wayne. You know, it's almost celebrated. The All Blacks have this policy. You know, they leave the change room completely clean.
I love that book they wrote. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, but it sounds like Wayne's been doing it for well before the All Blacks. So maybe we need to be celebrating Wayne a bit more than, I mean, people talk about, you know, him being one of the greatest, if not greatest, coaches of all time. But I think I look at it and go, the impact he's had is actually on young men has been far more beneficial than the impact he's had on football.
For sure. He's had a huge impact. You know, I was only with him for a year. I don't remember everything he said, but I always knew how I felt when I left my last few conversations with him. So, great coach. Yeah.
Now, I know you've got to head off, and I'm extremely appreciative of your time, but what's one thing you'd love to leave, an impact you'd love to have in the world before you're finished?
Oh, man. Probably... If a kid like me from the village can can do something with their life. You know, I know there was some luck involved, there's coincidence with my auntie taking me out of the village. I feel like hopefully I set an example for a lot of those kids who have it tough, who, you know, who don't have supporting networks around them. You know, they might just have that one person that believes in them, that helps them. So for me, hopefully I can pass on the message that there's people believing in you, find them and, you know, contribute to their life as much as they contribute to yours.
Love it. What a great way to finish. David, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to your mate Jerome, who set this up as well. Appreciate
Thanks, Jerome.
Both of you. really enjoyed the chat, mate, and thanks again.
Thanks, Ian. Really appreciate it, mate. It's been a pleasure having a chat with you.
Cheers, mate.
The big takeaways from today's chat with David Mead: communication and people skills aren't just for the workplace. They shape who you are in every part of life. Sport teaches life skills that stick with you long after the final whistle. It takes courage to take full responsibility, especially when excuses are easier. Vulnerability isn't a weakness. It's what allows real connection and growth. And when you stay humble and keep giving back, the flow-on effect reaches far beyond the game. Whether you're a parent, coach, athlete, or a leader, these are the kind of lessons that shape your personal life game plan and help you show up as the best in every arena. If this episode sparks something for you, share it with someone who needs to hear it, a mate, a teammate, or someone you lead. That one conversation could make all the difference. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.